Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I am so happy to be joined today by Helen Plumridge. Helen is the founder of King Recruit and King Executive, a partnership-led recruitment and search agency working with high-growth, small and medium-sized companies in the southwest of England. Helen's enjoyed a 20-year career in recruitment and started her own business 5 years ago. Then last year, Helen partnered with Recruitment Entrepreneur in order to grow, scale, and exit her business. She's also a marathon runner and devours business books and podcasts, so definitely my kind of person. So Helen, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the great intro, Mark. Great to be here.
Awesome. All right. So you've been in recruiting for 20 years. Obviously, there's only so much we can cover in an hour's conversation. But briefly, could you just tell us how you got started in recruiting?
It was the classic fall into recruitment. I'd moved back to the Southwest and I was walking up and down the high street one day, went into a couple of recruitment companies, went into Blue Arrow, and it was a choice between going into a bank to temp or coming into Blue Arrow to do some admin temping, which I did. And I just absolutely loved it from day one. And within 6 weeks, they offered me, well, the permanent consultant left and they offered me the position. And I got thrown at the desk, you know, in true sort of fashion. I got thrown at the desk to just kind of make it up as I go along.
So. Absolutely. Thrown in at the deep end. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, brilliant. And then, so I believe King Recruit is actually your second attempt at starting a business. So can you tell me the story of your first business startup and what you learned from that experience?
Sure, definitely. That was we set the business up. It was myself and another consultant. We'd worked for an independent called Caliber Recruitment for about 4 years. It was two ladies who'd set it up, really entrepreneurial, and it gave me the taste of wanting to set my own business up. So we set up the really good recruitment company in 2008. And if you remember, clearly,
wow,
that was a bad year.
Amazing timing. Gosh.
It was a bad year. And I just think we were too inexperienced to, we were sort of almost playing at it. And we were going back, you know, quite a long time now. So we had some successes. We used to do a lot of, you know, going out for lunches, networking and, you know, sort of wining and dining clients and things like that. But there's nowhere near the sort of success that I've had with King Recruit. And for one reason or another, it wasn't a great time for me personally either. So I made a really, really hard decision after 2 years and said that, you know, I'm kind of done. So, and I think what I've learned really from that was how not to do it, And if you're gonna do it seriously and have a really good team around you. And a really good sort of standing sort of support network as well. So, you know, the second time around, I've had my husband as my support. He's a businessman as well. So yeah.
Wow. That sounds like it was a really tough experience. My first business failed as well. I was only 19 at the time. It wasn't in recruiting, but it's such a hard, like it really was a setback in terms of my confidence and also just, you know, financially it was a huge setback because at that age, you know, I end up with, I think, $20,000 in debt, which when you're 20 is quite a lot.
That's a lot.
And so it took me A, time to recover from the financial setback, and B, the confidence and this sort of feeling ready to go at it again. But looking back, like, what if you could go back to your younger self and advise that Helen, what would you do differently?
I don't think I would. If it's hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I don't think I was ready at that time, if I'm completely honest.
In what way?
I think I just think from an experience and from an age perspective, where I was in life, I wasn't settled in my personal life at that time, and therefore I probably would have taken. And in fact, I've taken the advice that I learned from that to do this business, where I very much sort of slowly found my way into the market, started quite organically, just started, you know, to sort of prove myself in terms of billings, winning clients, not making a big sort of song or dance about it, and sort of, you know, doing that big PR while we've landed, without any sort of substance to go behind it. So, and I think I probably would have gone into a sort of, you know, a search firm in London, or gone international, you know, had a bit of time. I wish I'd sort of, if I had my time again, I'd probably go to do a year in New York or Australia, just to get that different experience within different firms.
Okay. Awesome. So it sounds like, you feel like there was lack of experience there, but B, and this is a huge factor, is you didn't have the support around you from a personal perspective, which that is huge. Like, I think anyone venturing out on their own to launch a business, having that support network, as you mentioned, is just such a huge factor, because it
makes such a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay. So that, let's move on to your current business, King Recruit. Why did you start that? And tell me the story of launching that business.
Well, the dream was still there. So even though I sort of packed it in and went and did insurance sales for a bit, that was great, actually. It was just a complete mind break. And I found it really easy. And I ended up being sort of top seller.
Oh, wow.
Even though it wasn't really my bag. Yeah, but
that's
then my
hilarious.
I mentioned Caliber Recruitment before, but that was sold to Select Appointments, which was then sold to Randstad. So my old boss actually said, "Oh, do you want to come back into recruitment and work for Randstad?" So that was great. That was a good couple of years. But then I got married, had a couple of kids, and I actually moved away from that love of recruitment for a bit. Randstad actually knocked that out of me. The corporate, the KPIs, the inflexibility, it was everything I really didn't like about hiring. And I just love, giving our consultants now freedom to do it their way. So, I had a bit of a break. I did an online shop for my husband's business. He's a hairdresser. And one day a friend said to me, we're really trying to find a couple of people within our finance team, and finding it really hard. And I said, well, maybe I can help. And I ended up sort of charging them a couple of sort of nominal fees. And it was actually my husband and my father-in-law who said, oh, that was really easy money. You're obviously really good at that. How did you just, do that? Just a few more conversations. And my father-in-law, who's passed now, sort of looked up at me one day and he said, that recruitment thing you do, he said, that's what you should do. that's your expertise. I mean, he's passed now, but and obviously the seed was sown. I obviously wanted to do it anyway, and I've always dreamed of growing and scaling a really successful business in the Southwest. I wanted to do it my way. I wanted to give people the opportunity to do it their way as well. So I started it fairly organically, and it's just grown from there, really. I think the game changer is clearly joining up forces with Recruitment Entrepreneur last year. So we've gone from being sort of, you know, organic to their now really, really strategic growth-led business. So yeah, it's been really exciting at all stages.
I love that. What a great story. And especially the fact that you fell out of love with recruitment for a while. I'm sure anyone who's been in this for a while has had, you know, certainly their ups and downs. Some, you know, this can be the best business in the world and it can be the worst depending on you know, so many factors and what's going on. So, but then you came back to it. So that's amazing. So, what did you do differently this time around to ensure that King Recruit was going to be successful?
I took it at my pace. I had a young family and I did just focus on what I really wanted to do, which was senior and executive recruitment. I also had a really good knowledge this time of sort of, I know this sounds really sort of a small factor, but sort of I did some bookkeeping for my husband's business. So I felt that I had that also, that control on that side, and I'd set the his website up. So I felt really confident this time in terms of doing all those aspects of setting a business up. And in fact, I found that quite easy. And yeah, I basically didn't want to make the same mistakes. I knew that I had to, you know, drive the revenue. I was in more of a comfortable position, Mark, because, you know, hubby's got his own business and he was supporting that initial period. So that made a huge difference in the first 3 to 6 months. And then I'm a big believer in sort of dreaming big. So I actually was started to look at going after, you know, quite a big client that I could win all their business and partner with them. And actually there was a company that came along that I happened to speak to the MD one day. And he said, well, actually, do you want to come and pitch for all of our business? We're private equity backed and we're going to grow and scale at pace. So come and pitch to us. So that's little of me, you know, with no team, just sitting in a little room in my home office, in, you know, / toy room, and went and sat down with him. Such a nice guy, such a inspirational. Now he's chairman, and he said, yeah, you know, come and present to the board, come and sit around the table. We are going to grow, you know, exponentially. We're going to have anywhere between sort of 7 and 15 positions a month across the whole of the business. And they're a holiday cottage business. So come and pitch. And then I think it was just on my 40th birthday that they then, we signed on the dotted line. And since then, it's been one of our biggest success stories. We've helped them grow and placed over 220 people with them. And that's allowed us to grow as well. So from sort of something quite small, I got an office, took on a new member of staff, and then started growing the team. And then passed that on to someone else, and then was able to go out and really go for it in the market in terms of other clients. So I really see that as a game changing moment, because it was a real foundation for the business, and it's a great case study as well. And we still work with them now. So
love that story. That let's dive into that a little more, because it was a great 40th birthday present. That's cool.
It was, apart from everything else. Yeah.
Could you just break down in a little more detail how you won that account? Because you made it sound almost like, you know, you met this MD and you got on well and so on. But like, could you, if we analyze it further, how did you, number one, get into contact with that MD? And then number two, being such a small business, how did you end up winning that large account?
I've always been that sort of, you know, candidate is king, hence King Recruit. So I really just focused on great candidates to start off with. And I just saw that this company was recruiting, you know, quite a number of positions, kept seeing them, and yeah, effectively introduced a quite high level commercial director to the MD. And as it turned out, I mean, he was quite interested to interview her, but as it turned out, she'd just got another position, sort of typical. And then I just went back to him and said, I mean, it seems to me that you're doing quite a big growth journey here. Would it be worth us meeting? And he just said, yeah, come and see me. So that was great, very exciting. And
can I just pause on that for a second to reflect? Because first of all, we call that MPC marketing. I don't know what you call it, where you have a most placeable candidate, someone who's a door opening candidate who's really, really strong, that you represent speculatively to one or more target companies. And you don't necessarily end up placing that original person, but it opens the door and gets you, it shows the quality of the people that you work with, the candidates you represent, and starts the conversation, which then leads to other things. So it sounds like that worked brilliantly in this case. Is that something you do a lot of, or?
It's my main winning method.
Oh, okay.
Most of the clients I win, me personally, that is my door opener. I'm a bit of a wordsmith. I just know all those ROIs and how to strategically word it. And I've won so many great clients. I've just got a new client yesterday, actually.
Oh, off the back congrats.
The back of introducing a sort of CFO to them. So that's my main method. As a team, other people do it differently. So I think everyone's got their own methods personally.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So with that said, you have actually, let me just double click on that a little bit. In our coaching program, we have a whole course on MPC marketing because it is such an effective business development strategy. But you mentioned something critical there, which is wordsmithing and being able to articulate the ROI. Could you elaborate on like how you hone in on the message that's going to get the attention of the client and make them interested in your candidate?
Yeah, absolutely. Really compelling subject line email. If it's a CFO that's driven X amount of profit in 5 years, you know, that's that's a pretty attention grabbing subject line.
Right.
And then it's very much, you know, it's most likely you've got someone fantastic in place, but I know as a business you're growing and scaling. We're a Southwest centric business, whatever that sort of is. And it's really that kind of whatever that couple of first lines of introduction is, of what that person's going to bring you, what it's brought to that previous business. And I'm always a big sort of believer in sort of stats, demonstrables and facts, rather than subjective lines about how fantastic and strategic this person is. You know, what exactly have they delivered to their previous business, and what can they bring you as an added value piece? So therefore, that for me always then justifies whatever that salary is.
Beautiful.
and then that should be the sort of selling bit. And then it's just those key four or five key lines again, with some really strong facts and figures and deliverables of what that person could bring the business. And then over to coming back to me. And my key tactic, Mark, that is always works is it's always the follow-up that works. It's not that first introduction. Always 95% of the time the follow-up email would really I'd really welcome your feedback on our strategic CFO. Here's the original email. Could we have a discussion? And it's always that people respond to.
Absolutely. So. You know, so there's a few takeaways here. Number one is identifying the quantifiable achievements of your candidate and what value or results they could potentially deliver for their next company. I think it sounds like you do a fantastic job of that. And that is so important to making this process work. There's a wonderful trainer in Atlanta in the US called Bob Marshall, who I've known for, I don't know, 15 or maybe 20 years even. And he teaches a formula which is called FAB, FAB, which stands for Feature Accomplishment Benefits. So the format of your MPC email, like feature, this is a, you know, CFO with 18 years experience with fast growing companies, and then accomplishment. In their most recent assignment, they were able to increase profit by 302%, which led to a successful sale worth X amount, right? The accomplishment. And then the benefit, what that means to you is potentially they could come in and achieve this, 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 and this for you. And so I just love how you do that. But what's cool is you use the accomplishment in the subject line, it sounds like, which I think that is a key takeaway, because subject lines are really important, even whether the email gets opened or read, because, you know, if you receive an email from someone you don't know, the default is delete, 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 right?
Yes.
So you need to have something that really captures their attention. Yep. So you've done a great job with that. And then the follow-up, if you are only sending one email and then moving on, then, dear listener, you are leaving money on the table. We have an email marketing platform that we use and that our coaching clients use a variety of different automation tools where you can track your metrics of like opens and responses and that sort of thing. And we, some of our members actually send not just two, but three, four, five messages. And I think three is the magic number for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's worth testing, because we have people, I always feel like more than three, it starts to become, you know, a bit annoying, but, you know, that's my own judgment that I'm imposing, and people really need to look at the actual data of what is effective, because I've got clients and they tell me, Mark, we get responses to the fifth, you know, sixth email. And and if we hadn't sent those, we wouldn't have made that sale. So, you know, it is about testing, but realizing, you know, people get so many emails that if you just send one, there's a good chance they don't respond. It doesn't mean they weren't interested. It's just that they had so much coming at them that it just fell by the wayside, and you need to follow up again.
Sometimes it's timing. So the follow-up for us always works Friday morning, guaranteed. If you do your follow-up on a Friday morning, quite early, you know, if you can send it at sort of 7 o'clock, ideal. It's the first email someone sees in their inbox. I'm an early bird, and I know a lot of CEOs and MDs are early birds as well, by design. So, you know,
that's
potentially
a good tip.
That first, quickly open the iPhone in bed with a coffee, maybe, or the train.
Absolutely. No, that's awesome. Because actually, I think if people don't respond, I think we all, as human beings, no matter what, even if you're a CEO or whoever, you always feel like you want to respond to people's emails, but you're just, people just don't have time to respond to every email, right? But then if you send a follow-up, it almost triggers, like, they feel bad, like, oh, I saw Helen's email, I didn't respond yet, let me go back and take a look at it again. So you sometimes find people actually apologize, that they'll write back and say, Helen, so sorry I didn't reply to your last email.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is hilarious, that you send someone a cold unsolicited email to a CEO or a chairman or managing director, and then they apologize to you for not responding.
I'd also, if it's done professionally, they also feel obliged. And is that respect, I think, also as... Yeah. I think you gain more. I personally believe, having worked on a sort of high street and also been a sort of more recruitment agency style person, you do get a lot more respect being in the sort of senior and executive market. So, because I think they always feel that they kind of need you or they might not need you now, but they might need you in the future.
Ah, yes. No, that's interesting. By the way, just terminology wise for our US listeners, high street is a British term, which implies it's like a employment agency sort of model where you have a an actual storefront maybe on Main Street. You, like in the US, they say Main Street. Here we say the high street, right? So it's like more staffing as opposed to search, which is what you're doing now. Helen, the other thing that you mentioned, which is, okay, your candidate ultimately had another offer and they didn't go to work for this company, but then you asked for a client meeting. And that's like, I grew up where you always, every single time, you would go and see the customer, right? In person, face to face. And I am a huge believer in that still. I think it's not as common now. And so...
not with COVID, no.
Well, that's true. But even pre-COVID, I think it just wasn't as common. And so if you're the one who makes the effort to go and see the client and other recruiters are just dealing with them by phone, then you've just got such a huge advantage. So
absolutely. And I think what you've got to remember as well, from a demographic point of view, they are baby boomers. So they grew up in that sort of face-to-face. They like phone call. They like a bit of TLC. They appreciate the effort that you make. We went to see a client that we've been working with for ages recently. There's three of us went on Mars to see them, did a bit of a site tour. But the appreciation was tremendous, the fact that we'd taken the time out of our day to come and see them.
Awesome. So, yeah, agree 100%.
Volumes, doesn't it?
So you went to see this guy, and then what was the key to, you know, opening that key, that major account, and that led to 220 placements?
Do you know what? There's no exact science, Mark. I'm not going to say anything that's kind of, oh, I went in there with a strategy and I wrote it all down and I made sure I said all these points. It was literally a chemistry meeting. It was literally building rapport, being completely honest. I think clearly I did pitch the fact that I had the capability when actually I didn't really have the capability behind me, because it was only me. So, but okay. I believed in my ability, and I think that was basically the main thing. And it was a kind of look each other in the eye, and he just felt that he wanted to work with me. And you know, it's the no, like, and trust mentality. I was being, you know, genuine. So I can't say fairer than that, really. I mean,
why did you ask them why they chose you?
I think it was simply that he really bought into me. He felt that I could deliver. He wanted to give me the opportunity as well. He's quite philanthropic, so he knew that I was a small business, and he just felt that, yeah, he'd love to also support me on my growth journey. That's how it felt.
That's cool.
Anyway, yeah.
You know, there is something to that. I think, especially if you're selling to somebody else who's an entrepreneur or who has been successful in business, then there is a sense of wanting to support or back another entrepreneur, and like, to people like a success story, and they like someone who's trying to build something. And I don't think everyone likes that. Like an average as middle manager, or like someone whose job's worth is not going to necessarily give you the time of day, but someone who is an entrepreneur themselves sees something in you and thinks, this is my kind of person. I want to help her like to get to the next level. So I think that's cool. Mm. Helen, though, I can't help pointing out, I think the challenge that you've got with an entrepreneurial style, like where the owner is also the lead salesperson, is people are buying into you, and that's true. People buy from people, but then if you're looking to scale, that's hard to replicate, right? And I think this is one of the barriers to people scaling, is the owner is often the one who wins the business, but pretty soon the company outgrows that and you need more people out there winning business for you. And if the success of the business came down to you and your personality, your experience, your network, people buying into you, then that can be difficult to replicate, right?
I would agree with you to a certain extent, but I think with the team that we've got now, they buy into the vision, they buy into me, and they buy into the brand and what we represent in the market. So actually, they have a different style of winning business, but actually, they're all, you know, I sort of select people that I feel are like-minded and are very likable, you know, as we all do in recruitment. So, I wouldn't say I'm the sole business winner in our team. You know, great. Everyone else is out there winning and capitalizing. But I think that sort of the reason why this win was so pivotal is because actually it forms the basis of how we work now. And it's very much that sort of partnership. We want to bed in with you and be that kind of true partner to you as a business. And everyone buys into that within the team, and they love working in that way with all of their clients. So that's what we aim for.
Love it. Yeah. So that account enabled you to build your team. How many people have you got now then, Helen?
We've got a happy or an even team of six at the moment.
Okay.
And we are, you know, recruiting as well. So we're looking for some people to add to our sort of specialist areas. So we're looking for someone else to join the sort of tech team, someone on the sort of finance side to take over from what I do on that side, and then someone on our sort of digital team as well. And I think being in the Southwest region, I think it even more so now, it can be quite a compelling sell to come and relocate to the Southwest.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
beautiful.
You know, one of our target sort of consultant markets is London and Bristol. And I think if they've got any affinity or they've been on holiday in the Southwest, the attraction is quite high.
Totally.
Yeah.
So is it an office-based culture, or do people work from home, or how does that, what's that set up?
Yeah, we're hybrid. It works really well for everyone. 3 days in, 2 days working from home.
Okay.
I'm a sort of very much in everyday type of person, but yes, the others like that balance, which I think a lot of people do.
Yes.
Now, post-COVID.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
All right. So six right now, but with you're expanding and hiring more people. And so do I understand the business model is it's regionally based, getting embedded with growing companies and then recruiting across all their functions? Is that the idea? Or
absolutely. Bang on, okay. Mark.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, that typical SME, or, you know, they've just had private equity, they want to do acquisitions, that's the sort of perfect, and it could be an owner-managed business, or, you know, someone that's looking to do some succession planning and so on, predominantly Southwest, and then UK and international domination after that, really, with being part of the RE group, so...
Absolutely. Well, we're going to come on to that shortly. What's the model like? Are you is it like an RPO? Are they paying a monthly retainer, or how does it actually work with those customers that you're, you know, creating that partnership with?
It's mainly built on exclusivity and trust to a certain extent, and I think you can do that with SMEs. It's not a corporate landscape down here. You've got PSLs in bigger companies, but that's not our target market. So I think you've just got the opportunity to really bed in with senior leadership team, as I said, owner managed business, and provide them that rounded support.
Awesome. All right. Interesting. Mm. So I'm going to introduce you to a lady who's been on the podcast before called Lisa Dixon, who's based in London, and she specializes in helping growing recruitment businesses to package their service offerings and have like an RPO model where they can more formalize that relationship with. It sounds like you're delivering that style of service anyway, so it just I guess protects you a little bit, and rather than just being based on trust, it's more there's deliverables and there's, you know, SLA and all that kind of stuff. But I like it. There is a downside though, which is with a small team, how do you recruit across all those different jobs? Like, which are like one day you're recruiting a marketing manager, next day you're, it might be a head of people, the next day it might be a salesperson. How do you cover all those different disciplines?
Everyone has their specialist division.
Okay.
So yeah, we've got, someone who heads up tech division, you know, and then finance, sales, marketing, HR, and then we've got the executive team. And therefore, it does feel that we've got mini specialisms within our capability.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. It doesn't feel like a catch-all kind of scenario, really.
Awesome. No, that I think is the perfect solution in that case. So tell me about how you got connected to Recruitment Entrepreneur.
As many people have done over the years, always followed the James Cahn story, read the autobiography, was very aware of Recruitment Entrepreneur in the market, had been following them. And during lockdown, when I'd furloughed my team, I sort of sat there one day and thought, you know, what do I want to do? Do I still want to do this business? And the answer was a resounding yes. And if I was going to come out all guns blazing from COVID, I wanted to grow, scale and exit, which was my dream. So I had that sort of time out kind of perspective, which a lot of people did, and started to then hire out of COVID and then approached RE, I think it was the October or the November of 2020. I just started the conversation, really. So
fantastic.
And then it went from there. Yeah.
Amazing. And what made you decide to go to joint venture with them? And rather than just continue, because it sounds like you were having some success and, you know, you could have just continued to grow organically and do it on your own. What was the decision to join forces with Recruitment Entrepreneur?
Lots of reasons, really, Mark. But I think the sort of key is, I think if you want to stay as a boutique, if you're a boutique recruitment company with aspirations, I think you can go through all those pitfalls along the way, and then perhaps turn around in sort of 6 or 7 years and think, oh, I've still got the aspiration and the pipe dream, but I've not quite done it, and I'm not getting any younger. So I'm in my mid 40s, really ambitious, and I just felt that I needed the expertise. And I needed that kind of professionalism. Again, support is a resounding word, to help me grow, scale and go on that journey. And I didn't want to make those mistakes. I didn't want to turn around in my early 50s and say, oh, you know, I've added a few people, I've lost a few people, oh, I'm still not there. I just wanted to shortcut it, basically.
Absolutely. Makes total sense.
And to work with, you know, a phenomenal group of people, might I add.
Yeah, it's a great team. I know several of the folks over there. So obviously, interviewed James a couple of times on the show, not met in person yet, but I met Abid in person when they were up in Scotland for one of their Recruitment Entrepreneur conference. Did you go to that one? Were you at?
I did, but I didn't see you there for some reason.
No, well, I came on, you guys had been doing the meeting all day, and I just came at the end and met up with Abbott and Doug Bugie.
Yeah,
great guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. So Doug, Abbott, I've met in person, and Tom, your head of marketing. Yep.
Yeah.
And a few other people. It does seem like a really fantastic support team that you've got around you. So what's happened since then in terms of the business?
We doubled our turnover last year.
Wow.
We're going to double it again this year. And we're on this high growth journey now. So we're paving the way for adding more people, obviously gaining more business, but also I don't think I would have looked at going outside the Southwest. There's a lot of businesses that are going international within the group. And yeah. I mean, some of the performers in the group are doing extremely well. So I think it's a great benchmark for the team as well, of what you can achieve. You know, the kind of new normal is X amount per month. I think it gives them that sort of reach as well. So, it's exciting. So it's been an exciting year so far. And next year, we're going to completely capitalise on the whole of the Southwest region before then, sort of next steps in 2024. So,
all right. I love it. I can tell you're excited. So, by the way, again, for our international listeners, turnover is a British term that basically means gross revenue, right? So how did you double your revenue last year? And you're going to do it again this year. What's been the difference?
I think just setting that bar higher. Really setting that bar higher, momentum, really understanding the P&L in a lot more detail, what the true break-even figures are. As I just mentioned, that higher performance, performance per head, looking at that. So just being much more sort of strategic and, number driven, but real-time data rather than we've had a good month.
Fantastic.
We've had a good month. Yeah.
So it's interesting because you mentioned the word benchmark and now you're setting the bar higher and almost expecting, more from yourself and also believing that it's achievable. And we've seen that in our coaching group is like when you're on your own, kind of just ticking along, you have nothing to really compare against and benchmark yourself against. So you're kind of thinking, yeah, we're doing okay, we're doing well. But then when you start seeing what other business owners are achieving, it really maybe just opens your mind to what's possible, and you start going, hey, we could totally do that. Or, how are they achieving that? And it almost creates that belief that bigger things are possible. Have you found that?
Oh, entirely. 100%. It's a platform. It's a platform really to just keep on reaching for that next level. And I think as motivated as you could be, I think it just takes you to that next level effectively, and it challenges you to strive for what you your full potential as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you've alluded earlier to a culture of hiring highly motivated people and giving them the freedom to do recruitment their way. And I'd love to hear more about that, because in some ways when you think about scaling a business, typically I would have thought that means that you develop like the King Recruit way of doing things. And there's more standardization and there's more systems and processes and people following your process or your way of doing things in order to make the business more scalable. So how do you reconcile, scaling and growing something, but at the same time, people have quite a lot of freedom?
Good. It's a really, really good question, that, Mark. It's not without systems and processes and vision and, King Recruit way, and this is where we're going. I mean, in terms of how they get to that, how they get there is up to them. How they do business development is up to them. How they do their marketing, how they approach it and reach their, and develop and convert their pipeline is up to them. So I've it's really about moving away from that sort of mentioning the main street or high street culture of, KPI driven, and you've got to sit there and make, let's do power hours, let's do video intros and you must do 10 of those a week, let's do drop bys, which we don't do so much anymore, companies don't do before. So it's more sort of, I think the model is, taking people from maybe a high street scenario and saying, actually, this is more mature, grown-up recruitment. We can then take you to your next level in terms of learning, retained and search and executive-style recruitment, but you can do it as a mini business within a business.
I get it. I get it. So, but does that mean you're hiring experienced consultants or...
That's my preference. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Interesting. Say more about that. Why is that your preference?
I just feel more comfortable with that. As in, mm-hmm. I can teach them. It's really. I think it's really. Based on my journey, I've made myself into a more search and executive focused, strategic recruiter, and I came from the high street. So that's my journey, and I can teach that to someone. I'm not so good at being able to get someone from a raw graduate type or someone inexperienced and try and teach them everything about recruitment. And I've learned that along the way. I've tried to do that and it's just not me. I like the maturity. I like people to be able to have the freedom and to do it their way and be quite a macro leader, really.
Interesting. So yeah, that can be a great for small but fast growing recruitment companies, that can actually be a great source of internal hires, is targeting people who have a few years experience working with a national or international chain or a company like, Robert Half or, Michael Page or,
Deco.
Adecco or Randstad or whatever. And they have a good foundation, but they're starting to get frustrated or maybe feeling constrained in that environment where, you're told, what to do every minute of, every hour of every day, and where it's all contingency and so on. And you're giving them an opportunity to build a business within a business, to have more autonomy in setting their own goals and deciding how they're going to achieve them. And also then supporting them to maybe work in an environment where they are moving up the value chain. They can work on more senior roles. They can work on retained business and that sort of thing. Is that the strategy here?
Absolutely. And I think, these individuals are more mature. We're all in our sort of late 30s, early 40s. So who wants to be told what to do when you've earned your stripes already?
Yes.
How are you going to kind of continue in it? And I think that's where, I lost the love of it myself at Randstad. Yes. And I was an experienced, passionate recruiter, and they sort of stamped that out of me. And, we've had someone join us from the from Office Angels actually recently. And she had all those frustrations, all the frustrations of working there, loves the job. But is it now enjoying, having the freedom to do it in a, grown up fashion? As a result, she's doing incredibly well as well. So
beautiful. Love it. That's so cool. I know when you and I have talked previously, hiring the right people is so important, right? And it is like, it's make it or break it. Like if you hire the wrong people, then the business can really, the growth can just be completely stalled or even set back because you burn through cash and then, you're no further forward. Or if you hire the right people, it can just like rocket your business to a whole nother level. So, I mean, that is such an important thing. And I know you'd said to me that in the past, you have made some hiring mistakes, hiring the wrong people. Could you tell me a little bit about like the hiring mistakes you made previously and then how you've corrected those, in your current business?
Yeah, I think I said in my my sort of notes, I'm a I've had to grow into leadership. You know, I wasn't someone, I was just, you know, I say just a consultant before. So I've grown into leadership. So I've grown into also that kind of managerial piece as well. I've made some wrong decisions. So, and actually, I think I had it in my mind early in the sort of King Recruit journey that we wanted, you know, kind of couple of guys that were really going to, you know, sort of cut it in our business. And I was kind of hiring guys for guys' sake because I felt that, you know, we needed a really good 50-50 split and that was the way to go. And actually that sort of, I was blinded to the fact that they weren't really probably the right culture fit or the right people. I don't really get on well with the kind of alpha style mentality.
I get it.
And I think now, you know, sort of knowing that mold now, I would, you know, again, our model's very much that mature person, and that counts for, you know, male or female, you know, diversity or whatever. It needs to be someone who is probably, you know, that sort of stage in life. And I think I've just got to the point now where I know whether someone's right for our business, whether they're going to be a good fit. But also sharing that with the team, you know, getting them involved, getting their opinion, getting them involved in the process so they can kind of give their opinions on it as well, which is really, really important.
So
they've got to work with them day in and day out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I think having your team involved at some stage of the hiring process is a great idea. Could you elaborate on like your internal hiring and like process, how you attract people and then how you vet them to make sure they are going to be right for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to how I would, you know, run my own recruitment for, you know, a search, really. You know, a lot of the time we're approaching people. We've got a bit of a talent pipeline as well. Again, taking the James Kahn, you know, methodology that you've always got people you're speaking to. And, you know, those coffees and things like that are really, really important. So it's always that sort of exploratory call, get to know you. I always feel that, actually did a call yesterday, that I feel that if I feel like I have to sell to someone, that's not right. And for some reason, there's an imbalance there. But if it flows and, you know, you have a really good conversation with someone, then, you know, that's the time where you kind of then go, right, let's meet for a coffee. And I take it really slowly, you know, let's meet for coffee, let's get to know each other. You know, what is it? What's important to you? What are you looking for? Where are you in life? You know, why? All those kind of really get to know you quality questions. And then not rushing in after that, you know, really sort of thinking about what that could look like, getting them to really think about what it could look like. You know, if you're going to shape your job role now, if you're going to come and join us, you know, what specialism are you really excites you? How do you think you could grow that division? Where do you think you could take it? And then getting them to kind of, you know, come back with a bit of a mini business plan effectively, present to the team, maybe even a further kind of more social kind of thing. And then, yeah, and then if it's all those, you know, if everything works along the line, you're happy, they're happy, then, you know, we'll move to a sort of an offer stage. So I've learned to take it a lot slower, basically.
Awesome. You said a key point, which I think is so important, that you treat it just like you would a search for a client brief. And I think that's one of the main reasons that smaller recruiting firms don't grow, is that their own internal hiring always gets takes a backseat to the client work, because the client work has a fee attached and you've made a commitment to someone, you've got a deadline. But then if you always just keep procrastinating on your own hiring and deprioritizing it, you're never going to grow. So you have to treat it. Yeah, exactly. Treat it as you would, like this is your most important search that you could undertake for your business, and be as rigorous and as you know, tenacious and proactive as you would on behalf of a client. And we're good at recruiting, so there's no reason you couldn't also recruit great people for your own business if you really committed to it and focused on it. Any other
thoughts or tips? I think it's also giving your Yeah, just give yourself time to breathe and think and ponder, because I think you can get, if you're a people person, you love interviewing, you know, and you get really excited and into it and you have a really good kind of meeting with someone. I think you can kind of get blinded by that kind of rapport almost, and maybe your own sort of excited kind of, well, I do anyway. I know I get too excited sometimes. But I've always let it breathe after that, sort of give yourself time to kind of really consider that individual, whether they can fit and all those different aspects. It's almost taking that emotion out and then just being more of a rational, put yourself in that rational mind, whether they're the right hire. I don't really now like making mistakes on hiring. I'd rather hire slowly and get the right person. And then, I don't really want to be sort of fast hiring and, you know, just let's see how they go and get rid of them in 3 months' time. But we're hiring at the moment, and I'm going away for 2 weeks next Friday. So actually, I'm going to sit on all of those, you know, conversations and let them also sit on it as well.
It's interesting. So how do you separate out and identify the qualities in someone where not just you like them and you have rapport, but they will be able to perform? Do you have any tests that you do or competency-based questions to really dig into those qualities that you think somebody really is going to do well with us?
Yeah, absolutely. All the, you know, it's not just a conversation, is it? It's all the competency-based questions as well. Really digging into the numbers of what they've achieved before, really understanding what their pipeline's been, you know, commissions, best months, all that sort of thing. Delving into all that sort of skills, doing a, you know, psychometrics testing as well, that always gives you a good picture of someone. Very much a kind of rounded process.
Awesome.
Obviously presentation as well, to see how they've thought it out, their methodology, how they're going to approach it.
That's fantastic, Helen. So you have a whole range of selection tools that you're leveraging. And what's the psychometric test that you're using?
It's actually DISC.
Oh, DISC. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
You're the second person in 2 days that's talked to me about DISC.
Ah.
And then what to you, like, what is the number one most important quality or trait that you're probing for when you're interviewing and really testing?
God, that's a good question, isn't it? I think really that absolute deep-rooted passion for this industry. Because I think if you've got that, then everything else follows. And I think when you also keep mentioning the sort of maturity, but you get to, I think if you, a lot of people sort of come in and they're transient in recruitment, or yeah, I spent 5 years in recruitment, then I came out of it. But I think if you get people in the late 30s, early 40s, and they're still in recruitment, they obviously clearly love it. I wouldn't take that as a, they obviously love it. But I think you've then got someone that really has got all the other facets, such as, you know, tenacity and determination and, you know, sales ability, et cetera.
Can I play devil's advocate?
You can if you want. Yeah, why not?
Because I'm just wondering, like, isn't there a risk that you hire people who are burnt out or who, like, yes, they're still in it, but, and they do okay, but they're not going to, like, really drive your company forward? Because there must be a lot of lifers in recruitment who kind of just have always done recruiting and they're, you know, obviously you wouldn't stay in it if you weren't doing okay, but they're not necessarily going to be the rocket fuel that propels your company forward. How do you sift out the ones who, you know, are just average and hire the really great ones?
I mean, I mentioned the word passion. So yeah. I think, you know, genuinely, if they are genuinely passionate, that, you know, that you can't kind of buy that, you can't fake that. You know, and I think there's also And, you know, it makes it sound like we're never going to hire guys. But I think women in their late 30s, early 40s, you've got something to prove. You know, you may have had children, or if not, you know, you might have stepchildren or dogs or whatever. But this is our time. You know, this is our time to right. earn our own money and to go for it and to win at work. And I find that with so many, you know, women at our age that, you know, that's what they're, that's, you know, that's what they've
got. That's the DNA that you're looking for.
That's the DNA. Yeah.
Helen, well, your passion like just absolutely shines through. I've so much enjoyed this conversation. Thank you again for coming on the show. And yeah, I wish you every success. I'll be following your journey closely. I want to see you continuing to double every year. That's amazing. You'll need to come back. come back strange. Again and tell us the next chapter. Oh, there's just before you go, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you. I think you ran the Great Wall of China marathon with your husband. Yeah. Could you tell me about that?
2016, I think. Yeah, we had this mad thing that we thought, and it kept popping up on Facebook, you know, run the Great Wall of China marathon. So we went out there on a whirlwind sort of 5-day trip, left the kids with grandmum, and never been to Beijing before. I mean, it's just incredible just being on the wall itself. I mean, you know, the fact that you can see it from space, and it's 5,500 steps, the Great Wall of China, and they're all crooked, they're all different sizes, so it's not just like running up steps. It is, yeah, you've got to have all your wits about you. And then just being in that sort of yin and yang square right in the middle before you go off the run is just phenomenal. We actually had, there was a load of Kiwis over who were doing the sort of fun run part, and they did the hacker at the start.
Oh, wow. That would be cool.
Yeah, to signal the run going off. So you were just in, yes, come on mode. It took about 6 hours. It was quite long because it's just so, you know, the navigation on the wall. I think about seven people from 70 different countries took part as well, wow. Which again, was just a sight to see. So, yeah, but we did it. So it was more about, it was as it often is, it's all about the journey, isn't it? So we went on some really, really incredible training runs together. So as a wife and husband duo, it was, yeah, it was quite a journey as well. So.
Wow. What an incredible experience. I'm super impressed with that. That sounds amazing, Helen. Well, look, you've been a star. I'll look forward to our next conversation where you can tell me the latest successes at King Recruit, and have an awesome day. To those tuning in, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening to this episode, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mark.